Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's time for Point Taken. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Bride.
Happy Monday, everybody.
Happy Cinco de Mayo.
Yes, I don't.
Do you
I don't
think
really
it'll get renamed
that.
Today?
By the president?
Yeah.
Yeah, probably. What's he going to call it?
The 5th of May. We yeah. speak English in
Something
this country.
Original like that? Yes. All right, Matt Smith.
Hi, good morning.
Political director at Channel 12 in Milwaukee.
Margaritas for all?
Margaritas for all.
Well, we could have.
Are you a salsa or a guac guy?
I love both.
Love both.
I just put salsa on something yesterday. Yeah, I love salsa.
The guac is extra. Always extra.
You know, my wife's allergic to guac now because of avocado, so it sort of buzzkilled that for me.
Mm.
Yeah, it's a sad thing because I love guac. Remember, you know when they make it in the
restaurant?
All right,
no, we're getting started.
Come on.
We're not going down that rabbit hole.
Well,
right.
You brought it up.
So kind of a Friday news dump. Feels like unless you were in the political world, I'm not going to say it got buried, but in comparison to the previous Friday when Judge Dugan got arrested, this felt like news for people who follow politics, but not necessarily news for people who were just going about their weekend. So border czar Tom Homan had... When did he first give that statement? Was it mid last
Thursday.
Week?
It was Thursday.
So let's play a little bit of that.
Your comments on the Wisconsin governor sending directives to state agencies to not comply with ICE and actually stop your deportation efforts.
I'd like to see what's coming.
Any updates on the military?
I meant what I said. You can not support what we're doing. And you can support Sanctuary City. That's what you want to do. But if you cross that line of impediment, or knowingly harbor concealment illegal alien, that is a felony. And we're treated as such.
Tough talk.
So the context there being in reaction to the memo that when you were here last week, Matt, we were talking about Governor Evers' memo as guidance to state employees as far as how to react if ICE were to show up, and give people a reminder of what that memo said.
So essentially, the governor, through the Department of Administration, issued this guidance to all state employees that said if ICE agents show up inside a state building, our guidance to you is you first call an attorney. You don't answer your questions. You don't answer their questions. You don't hand over any documents, give them access to any state computers until you first consult that attorney.
And so that seems... legal, not a lawyer, but that seems, I think, illegal. And so what happened on Friday, which I was kind of surprised by, and I was then interested to see who was sharing it and who kind of raised alarms about it or not, was Governor Evers released a 3-minute video responding to Homan's statement.
And as disgusted as I am about the continued actions of the Trump administration, I'm not afraid. I've never once been discouraged from doing the right thing. I will not start today. You know, I swore an oath when I took this office to support the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the state of Wisconsin and to faithfully discharge the duties of this office to the best of my ability. I will never waver from that promise.
So, Matt, what was your interpretation when you saw this video get released on Friday?
So, I mean, clearly the Tom Homan comments got a lot of attention, especially the wait and see what happens, right? Because, I mean, there's just a lot of people can take that in 7 million different directions. And there have been calls even from some Republican state lawmakers to arrest the governor over this guidance. There's been no indication that anything has actually happened, like any agents have actually been inside state buildings in terms of implementing this. But clearly the governor, in releasing a 3-minute pre-recorded video statement, wanted to get in front of this and wanted to get his side out, just as he did in our interview the week before.
And on Upfront, you interviewed Josh Call, AG for the state of Wisconsin. Do we have that audio?
I have to say, I'm surprised that this has received as much pushback as it had. As I understand it, the governor has suggested that if ICE comes somewhere, that the state agency should make sure to get their attorneys involved in the process. That's a reasonable thing that I think anybody would suggest in this circumstance. Having attorneys work the process to make sure that things are done lawfully, that the rights of state citizens are protected, because the state government, of course, has a lot of confidential and private data regarding state citizens. That's just common sense. So I think this is an effort to politicize what is really a common sense move from the Evers administration.
So you're comfortable with this guidance?
Yes.
I find myself agreeing with the Attorney General Josh Call because it seems reasonable. But what we know about politics now, it's not reasonable at all. And everything is sort of accusatory And anything that pushes back or at least appears to push back against what this administration, the Trump administration, is trying to do on immigration, deportation, is going to be seen as sort of an enemies list. And now, for whatever reason, just a simple statement that the governor made about this question, which I think is perfectly reasonable. You have a right to an attorney. If someone challenged you with a legal document or an arrest warrant, you have a right to an attorney. But that's the state of affairs that we're in now, where you're going to everything's going to be looked at in this political lens. And this administration has shown pretty clearly they're not interested in negotiating these things. They're going to do what they're going to do.
Well, and it's turned into a legal question, or it's going to turn into a legal question. That's why we are curious if the AG is backing this. And I'm sure there have been a ton of lawyers, if they hadn't before it was issued, have now looked at this guidance to make sure that if anything is challenged. And the question is going to be, there have been a lot of Republicans who have said, especially after the Judge Dugan arrest, state employees, watch what you do. Don't follow the governor's advice, because if you do impede, the Trump administration is going to have no appetite for that.
Yeah. All right. Well, speaking of Judge Dugan's arrest, when we come back, you also spoke to Representative Scott Fitzgerald over the weekend on Upfront. So we'll talk a little bit about what Congress thinks of her arrest after this on Point Taken. Honoring those who dedicate their lives to keeping us safe, WTMJ is highlighting first responders who went above and beyond this past year through Steve Scafidi's Salute to Service presented by Waterstone Bank. You can nominate your first responder now at WTMJ.com or the WTMJ app. The nomination period is open now through this Friday, May 9th. Finalists will be recognized during Hero Week, May 19th through May 23rd. Help us tell your stories. WTMJ's Steve Scafidi's Salute to Service, presented by
Waterstone Bank. Yeah, and I need those nominations, because next week is interview week, because we roll it out the week after with the Heroes Week. So what I need is just tell me the story in, you know, a couple paragraphs. Emergency room nurse. I need a dispatcher this year. I don't see any of the nominations that I've looked at so far. I have dispatchers.
You have like a quota?
I'd like to have a nice mix, because okay, then I can make
better
choices.
So it's not the best story? It's which?
No, it's all of that, all of the above. But I want to make sure we're getting all of the nominations so that I have a good... I mean, I've had like 50 last year, and I don't think we're anywhere close to that yet. So get those nominations in. There's a Salute to Service banner right on WTMJ.com. Easy to find. And send me that information. And as I said, we'll start the interviews next week, and we'll roll out those features in Heroes Week, which is, I believe, the 19th of the month. All right. So we went from talking about these sort of the guidance the governor's provided, the reaction of Tom Homan, and now we're looking at another piece to the story, and that has to do with the Hannah Dugan piece. And this is sort of an amazing story as well, because we know what happened. We spent a lot of time on Point Taken last week discussing this case, and the week before, too. Was it last week or the week before?
It was Friday. You were gone the day that it happened.
Yeah.
You were
so,
the draft.
So the next piece of this story is sort of the interesting piece for me, and I think we have some audio from one of our congressmen in the great state of Wisconsin. That is Fitzgerald.
Scott Fitzgerald, Scott Fitzgerald on Upfront over the weekend.
Yeah. Was it necessary the way it went down, hauling her out in handcuffs out of the county courthouse?
Yeah, I know the optics were certainly strong, and I think many of my colleagues that have seen it were wondering if it had to be handled that way, but... You know, not all crime is premeditated, and what Judge Dugan did is outrageous.
Do you see the Judiciary Committee weighing in on the Dugan case at all specifically, or any other case involving judges nationwide right now?
You know, there's been a lot of discussion with Chairman Jordan about that. I don't think anything has really kind of fully developed to the point where Congress would be weighing in on anything specific. But certainly it falls under our purview if there are some things that emerge nationally.
Interesting comment, because I'm the one that says Congress has sort of abdicated all the responsibility to the administration. But I guess, for me, the sort of the conversation here is how much of this stuff is going on and how much will continue, at least in the state of Wisconsin, when it comes to these activities.
Yeah, I mean, that is the question. And what happens next in this specific case, and B, if any other entities get involved, like Congress, like House Judiciary Committee, which Republicans control, and if they look to further cement what the administration is doing, or potentially put up some roadblocks. I think there's a lot of unanswered questions. And it was interesting, I thought, to hear him say that there were a lot of House members who paused a little bit just in terms of how this arrest went down.
His colleagues,
FBI, his Republican colleagues on Capitol Hill. So this clearly has received a lot of attention, mm-hmm. as the Trump administration wanted it to.
So this is a question, and I feel like her legal team, Judge Dugan's legal team, have you looked much into this yet? As far as it's a former U.S. Solicitor, Paul, is it Clement or Clemente? Paul Clemente?
Yeah.
And he's a Bush administration guy, right? So this guy is a Republican, and he is on her legal team. Have you looked into much of like who her, this LeBron James or like all-star legal team
is? It's a massive legal team that she's assembled, including some people here in Wisconsin, some people nationally. And I think anyone in the legal world, once they hear these names, like, wow, they're ready to fight. I think they know they have to fight because it doesn't appear that the administration or the government at this point is looking to reach any type of deal, and I don't even know if she would want to if one was presented.
Exactly. And so do you think this is people standing up for the sanctity of the courtroom and the third branch being the judiciary, and like what, like the attraction of some of these lawyers crossing potentially party lines to be on her legal team? Is it something that has more to do with the rule of law? Or do you not know?
Perhaps. Okay. I mean, it could be that, right? And I think the appeal of high-profile cases, right? Okay. I mean, you know, I think it could be all of the above.
Interesting.
The thing that sort of, you know, we've alluded to this on the show, we've talked about it on the show with Kristen and I, is that Judge Dugan has a history. She's made comments. She's had not illegal actions, but she's certainly said and done things that have not put her career and her public persona, not her judicial persona, in the best possible light. Matter of fact, I can tell you that I've gotten emails and texts from people in the law enforcement community that says she's not a friend of law enforcement at all.
Well, Judge Kunmensch said that on
air. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And Judge Kunmensch is a colleague of hers and somebody who has also praised her on occasion on other stories and other pieces of her work as a judge. I guess for me, the perspective is one's history always has a part to play in these storylines, right? The context of what you're doing or saying. Do we know anything about where that story goes next from a reporter's perspective? Where is it going next? Like, no, when is she going to be on trial?
Mid-May is the next hearing, I believe the 15th. Don't quote me on that, but it's mid-May. She has her next hearing. And then the question is, does she request a speedy trial? Does this happen, like, literally in the next couple of months? Or is this super prolonged? And it depends on, obviously, defense strategy and what they're looking into and how they're looking to present the case. Obviously, this past week and going into this week, we'll see what happens. But it's kind of, you know, the temperature has lowered a little bit. Obviously, we saw the Supreme Court action, but she was already off the bench. They appointed a reserve judge to come in.
Right.
So I think now there's just kind of a lot of wait and see. And it'll be curious to see how judges across the state and country respond in the days and weeks ahead if they were confronted with a similar situation.
It's interesting that we see these big stories blow up, the arrest of Judge Dugan and certainly all the conversation about deportations. But I think what people forget, and certainly our audience is probably part of that as well, because everybody wants like instant justice or instant answers. All these things are going to be tied up in courts for a long time, including some of these things may go out for years based on decisions that this administration is doing that challenge, I don't want to say the status quo, but challenge the way things have always been done in the past. Now, you could also argue on the other side, all of these issues are related to a complete breakdown in our immigration system, our border policy, and these are natural byproducts of the political reaction and probably more importantly, the voter reaction to those stories. So I would caution people, these things are going to take time to flesh out. We're going to be talking about this for a long time.
There you go.
All right.
All right. Break. People talking at town halls?
Ooh.
Talk more about that after this.
Point taken on a Monday. Of course, that means Matt Smith, political director at Channel 12. And they got some nice awards at the Wisconsin Broadcast Association gala this week. And as did my teammate, by the way, Kristen Bry, Online Personality Award, which I won a few times. But you deserve that award because you do a way better job than I ever did. So congratulations.
Thank you.
It's just a piece of what you do. You can also see her great work in the Journal Sentinel, including her latest piece on...
I rewrote the lyrics to... Three-ring government from Schoolhouse Rock to reflect the one ring that seems to be overpowering the other two rings.
And as I said this morning, I think I said a great concept and great writing. All right, so these town hall things that are getting a lot of tension around the country. Which is the guest that you had on up front?
Scott Fitzgerald.
Scott
who was one of the first in the back in January, early February, was one of the representatives across the country who had a town hall, who was maybe taken by surprise.
Yeah, packed room.
The reaction that he got. So he has not had one since.
No, and Republicans, like leadership, said, we maybe suggest you hold off on these in-person town halls based on what we saw in places like Wisconsin.
Exactly. And so you got a chance to ask him about it this weekend.
So you do plan on holding in-person town halls like that again in the future?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's something that comes with the job. It's, when you're at a fever pitch on something like what we're going through right now with the big shakeup in D.C., you just want to make sure that people are respectful and that they're not yelling over the top of their own neighbors as they try to express themselves as well.
I actually agree with Fitz there. I think you should still do these because this idea that you're going to go to a town hall and everyone agrees with you is sort of specious. That's not going to happen. You want some conflict. Now, should you be yelling and shouting at each other? No, that's not productive. And it probably will get your town hall canceled pretty quickly or the doors shut. But I welcome the challenge because obviously he's on the Republican side. He's representing the administration to some degree. He's representing all of us, including the people that didn't vote for him in Congress. These are healthy debates about the policies that are impacting all of us and probably more important for him, those voters in Wisconsin who maybe even didn't vote for him. I like the answer. Show me something. Are you going to still do them at some sort of a, soon to come basis? That's what I would expect from the congressman.
Yeah, it'll be curious to see how these play out with other members of the delegation. And Fitz cited and others have cited security concerns,
as a real
threat targeting members of Congress. And typically at these, you will see law enforcement at this point, in this day and age. So, the question is coordinating with law enforcement to ensure that they're also safe for everyone to attend. It sounds like he's full speed ahead. We've seen other lawmakers do telephone town halls, Brian Stile, Derek Van Orden, Senator Johnson, Senator Baldwin.
Has Tony Weed even done a video one? Has he done anything?
That's a good question. I feel like I may have remembered a telephone, but I don't remember off the top of my head.
Because at least
new congressman
in
from
person,
the
I think it's been Glenn Grossman and Fitz.
Yep.
The other three Republicans. Has Tom Tiffany had one?
No, I believe telephone.
Okay.
Yeah. And Gwen Moore in Democrat had a couple in person.
Well, and this is now the strategy of Democrats, right? Is trying to show up in other people's districts and have empty chair town halls. It is Point Taken on WTMJ on this Monday, Cinco de Mayo. We are talking to Matt Smith, political director at Channel 12. So you guys had a chance to catch up with some, the bellwether county.
Yeah.
See, I was told that Door County is also a bellwether county.
It was, but they got it wrong.
Yeah, so they got it wrong.
Okay, so now they can't still claim it.
No. So Sauk County's got like 5 in a row, right?
Yes, and then like broadly 11 of 12, picking the presidential winner in Sauk County, just outside of Madison. So we went there for a day last week. I was curious, what people were talking about 100 days into the Trump administration. Because literally it's a 50-50 county. And I don't know how they do it, but they're picking the winners right all the time over there.
How did you pick out who you wanted to talk to? Well,
a lot of it was random. We went to the grocery store. We went and found some small businesses. Mm-hmm. And we kind of went there without a list of people lined up to interview because I wanted to find people just everyday.
Who would be
residents.
Willing to talk?
Just curious, before we play the clip, anyone just say, I'm not doing that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I always love those.
Yeah. They were, they would, the camera is intimidating, right?
Yeah.
So they would talk to me off camera. They'd talk my ear off. But there are people who are hesitant, just to talk politics.
Well,
publicly.
Especially in that county, right?
Yes.
Because you don't know, it's so 50-50 that in the attempt to be nice to your neighbors
and
not.
It's small.
Yes. I would imagine that there's people tread lightly.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see what some Sauk County residents had to say.
What do you think of the first 100 days? You happy?
I am.
At the local supermarket, the economy and tariffs seem top of mind.
I would say, the whole tariff thing, I think everybody can sit tight. I'm a firm believer in looking at the big picture, not what's right in front of you.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping.
Like Lauren Zwitter, Gary Fearing voted for President Trump, too.
It don't look good right now, but I hope they're going in the right direction, but time will tell.
Do you regret your vote, or are you just a little concerned?
I'm always concerned. When it hits your pocketbook, you're always concerned.
It does highlight the biggest question, right? So how short-term is this pain, or is it a long-term pain? when you're talking about gas and groceries issues, because that was certainly one of the linchpins of the Trump campaign for president.
I mean, right, you look at November, it was a huge factor on voters' minds, the economy. There's all this other noise out there, but when it comes down to it, it comes down to the economy and what people are feeling in their pocketbooks. And we heard that over and over and over when we were in Stock County.
So how many people did you end up talking to? Because obviously we heard from Steve right there.
A couple dozen.
And what was the, was it 50-50?
It was mixed. Yeah, it was 50-50. We talked to some small business owners. We talked to a guy who owns the local toy store in town, and he was talking about tariffs and how he just, a lot of his stuff comes from China. So he loaded up to have enough stock for Christmas. And the question is, are people going to be buying at Christmas? I mean, so people are looking to respond in different ways.
If I said to you, would it be a proper way to put this in some context that the Trump supporters are pretty all in on these, as the voter said, they're sit tight.
Yeah.
Sort of talking point.
And you heard her say she's a big Trump supporter. Yeah. And she said, I hope, right? Yeah. I hope this turns out the way that the Trump administration, the president has said it will.
This is one of the most interesting questions about all of this. And again, short-term pain, long-term gain. Yeah. How long this lasts and the impact on gas and groceries. Because even the most strident Trump supporter, they still have to pay their bills. They still, at the end of the month, have to reconcile, you know, what costs more, what, you know, hopefully what costs less. And at the end of the day, they have to make a decision. Did this actually work out in my favor? Or am I talking about this a year from now, which Bill McCosh would tell me that can't be the reality because Trump voters will turn on him pretty quickly if they're still paying higher prices.
Yeah.
Impact on 401ks, part of that. Did anyone bring up 401ks on your conversation?
No, it was not specifically, no, which is interesting. I mean, because we did talk to a mix of, you know, younger voters and people older, you know, near retirement or retired. But it all went back to the economy, right?
Like the cost of things.
Yeah. Like the cost of things. Like we would, you know, could talk about, you know, obviously people have strong views on immigration, but like what really matters, and maybe it was because we talked to a lot of people outside the grocery store and we kind of did that on purpose. It's the economy.
Stupid.
Yeah. Hey,
not that young. All right. When we come back, you had a chance to sit down with UW-Madison Chancellor Jennifer Mnuchin, again, Trump's 100 days. And we all know that there has been a lot of uncertainty for universities, and different universities are handling that in different ways. So we'll talk a little bit more about that with Matt Smith, political director at Channel 12, after this.
Oh, happy Monday, everybody. Cinco de Mayo, as Kristen pointed out earlier. Kristen Brize, Steve Scafidi, and Matt Smith, political director at Channel 12 here in Milwaukee, and host of Upfront, which, as I've said many, many times, is one of the best political talk shows and just a forum for some of the newsmakers, game changers, you might want to use that term as well, in politics, in our state and in our country. And you talked to the chancellor at UW, Jennifer
Mnuchin.
Yeah. What did she have on her mind?
There's a lot going on with universities and the Trump administration and these first 100 days and like this escalating back and forth and feud between some of them. And now, you know, after what we saw with Harvard, the question is like, how far are these universities looking to push back on the Trump administration, and what will the cause and effect of that be?
Yeah.
I'm curious how you would describe the first 100 days of the Trump administration from your perspective.
Well, it's been certainly a whirlwind, and there have been a number of things that cause us concern. The research we do at UW-Madison is such an incredibly important part of, well, frankly, the Wisconsin economy and innovation and invention. And there are a lot of challenges to the funding for that research, and we are concerned about that. We're very concerned. We're also concerned about academic freedom and the ability of universities to give students transformative experiences and serve our state.
So that's the thing I find interesting, as far as there is the Ivy League schools that I've been reading more about, as far as Yale, and like they have these massive endowments that are trying to change some of their financial situations because they can, because of the money that they have, to weather this storm. Now, did you give a chance to, we have not covered this story yet, but did you have a chance to talk to the chancellor about this Big Ten schools creating a mutual defense compact, like NATO?
UW is voting on that today, actually.
They are?
The UW Faculty Senate voting on that today, whether to join this. It's non-binding, but it's like, all right, should the Big Ten schools, you know, all come together and take on the Trump administration? We didn't talk specifically about that, but we talked, you know, about how far from an administrative level, UW is willing to go. She signed on to a letter with other college campus leaders, essentially blasting the Trump administration in what they call a threat to academic freedom. You have conservatives, Republicans will come out and say, well, you know, conservatives have been under attack on college campuses. That's the real threat. So there's a lot going on, and it's going to be curious to see how far UW goes and what the impact of these funding cuts now on research is going to be.
I buy into the, you know, the conservatives saying that maybe our viewpoint's not being expressed. And there's probably some of that's true. But the one thing that really bothers me and sort of boggles my mind is the fact that research into some of the most significant diseases and ailments that we've talked about for decades in this country, maybe longer than that, you know, heart disease, Alzheimer's, dementia in the same realm, diabetes. All of these things are being researched on campuses at some of the highest levels across the spectrum of research on anything. And if we endanger those funds, where's that work going to be done? Private labs? Well, that's a big ask. This is a significant work that needs to be done. And who in this room or in this audience, the collective radio audience, hasn't been impacted by all of these things, heart disease or dementia? It's clearly something that I think should be bipartisan, and I hope that it is, but I'm struggling to see where this administration is going on this piece of this, other than just making this blanket, we're not giving you the money because we don't like what you're saying about conservatives on campus. That maybe I understand. The rest of it doesn't make sense to me.
I mean, I'm the same. When it comes to science, because I think that's where science is not, I would think, not political. Maybe you can make it political, but as far as, like Steve said, as far as how some of these diseases impact all of our lives, like I'll say for us, like I had a cousin who had Duchenne's muscular dystrophy, and he never left Children's, even though he lived to 32, because he wasn't supposed to live past 18. And the only reason we got that many more years with him is because of, in his lifetime, the scientific developments they got for his disease specifically. And there's thousands of stories like that. And UW-Madison is one of the top research institutions in the country, if not the world. And if you take this money, I don't think that there is the appetite from private companies to pick up the mantle.
Yeah, last year, the sixth largest in the country. I mean, yeah. UW is no joke in terms of just what
they have. It was a huge deal when we fell out of number five.
Yes.
During Scott Walker's. I remember that when that was huge news, that for years we were in the top five research institutes. And when we fell out of it, it was a big deal.
And I think, to put in perspective, I think last year there was about $1.8 billion in grants that Madison received. Of that 1.8, about $1 billion came from the federal government, just in terms of. So there's a significant funding coming from the federal government for these research institutions.
I know two researchers at Madison personally. One used to live with me when I was growing up, and she does a lot of significant work. And the other one has to do with a much more broader topic that's not related to disease. But they're legitimately concerned about their ability to do basic research or even have their funding eliminated completely, which it doesn't seem like a positive to me. And if the effort here is to, and maybe I'm generalizing, to dumb down the population for whatever hell reason you want to do that, I don't think that's a good development. I think it's dangerous. And we need to think longer and harder, including as voters and citizens, that this is the way we want our future to go when it comes to research, and probably more importantly, academics. She's Chris and I'm Steve. One more segment with Matt Smith, political director at Channel 12. You're listening, of course, to Point Taken on 620 WTMJ.
Point taken. I am Kristen Bry. He is Steve Scafidi. And on Mondays, we talked to Matt Smith, who is the political director at Channel 12. We didn't get to talk about this much, but we have our first Republican candidate who is announced to run against maybe Tony Evers.
Who will be on this
year?
Program at 10:08 tomorrow.
I thought it was 10:35.
10:35, you're correct.
Yep, keeps changing.
Yeah, because he keeps changing these
things.
But schedules.
Yes, Josh Showman, thoughts on his announcement? I guess this is not a surprise to you, I imagine?
Not surprising that he's in. I think it's going to be curious to see how many other Republicans join the field, what the governor does, if he's going to run for re-election for a third term or not, and just how big this Republican primary is going to be. And is this going to be
how ugly it's going to get?
Yeah, is this going to be a Trump primary? Is Trump going to dominate Republicans going into next year in the midterms? And what that will do in a critical divided state like Wisconsin. I think the Trump factor is the big question. If he endorses, if people seek his endorsement, and how that all plays out.
And knowing Josh a little bit, because he was a guest on my program for a couple of years, I'm sure he would probably accept the Trump endorsement. Yeah. But I also know Josh is a guy that he gets things done. He's been sort of non-political in the way he's approached that job, even though he certainly has a lot to say about politics in this country. There's so many unknowns.
Yeah.
Will Tony Evers run again? I used to say no, but now I think yes for a third term. Who else is getting in the race? What are some of the names that are being thrown out for Republican nomination for governor?
I mean, Tom Tiffany is considering. That name has been thrown out. Bill Berrien, a businessman here in southeast Wisconsin.
Nobody knows that name.
No, he's launched a political action committee to kind of explore this. There have been some rumblings about if Eric Hovde would join, who would throw his name in again after running for Senate.
Would he grow the mustache back, do you think?
That's the question, right?
Slightly whiplash?
A-B test that.
I mean, there's probably some state law. Lawmakers,
Rebecca Clayfish?
I've not heard her name.
I was going to say, have we heard, what is she doing these days? I know after the last governor's race, she was working on trying to recruit more women Republican candidates.
Yes, and especially for local races, right?
Yeah.
Like think school board or the assembly. So she's still working on that front. I have not heard her name thrown out as a potential candidate for governor. But surprise some state lawmakers, perhaps maybe throwing their name. So it'll be curious to see how big this field is. And then what happens on the Democratic side if we're going to have a primary or if it's going to be the governor.
In your mind, as a reporter, why do you think he announced so early?
Fundraising.
That's what I thought.
And to get his name out there, name recognition. I mean, it is, only a year and a half away? So, I mean, you got to get the wheels moving. And you want to soak up some of the oxygen in terms of fundraising and support and get people behind you early.
Always do a look ahead with you. We don't have a ton of time. But what are you looking ahead to covering this week? Possible guests?
Yeah, I mean, I think always keeping an eye on what develops, if there's any new developments with the governor and the Trump administration and how that all plays out this week. We're going to, I think, start to see some rumblings on the state budget in the coming days and weeks with Republicans. I mean, we're getting close to needing something to get done. So Republicans, I know, are working on what their version is going to be. So I think that's going to take up a lot of oxygen once finally we kind of see this public back and forth start to spill out.
Got it.
Matt Smith, political director at Channel 12 in Milwaukee. Always great to talk to you.
Yeah.
We'll do it again next Monday.
Sounds good.
She's Kristen. I'm Steve. Lots more to talk about on Point Taken PT.
Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue. It's time for Point Taken. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Braun.
Hello, hello, hello. It is the 11 o'clock hour of Point Taken, and I have very mixed feelings. I feel like we have to talk about this, but the question is, isn't that the point of them doing this, is so that people talk about it?
It's a tough one, right? It's like, look, and I went back and forth on the same question. So what we're talking about, on Donald Trump, the president of the United States Truth Social account, he posted a picture that he didn't create, but someone created, I don't know who it was, of him as the Pope.
So if you have not seen this image yet, if you text 855-616-1620, if you text the word watch, we have the picture that he tweeted out up on our YouTube stream right now. So you can see the picture that was he tweeted out first. Well, he put out for, he post, he Truth Social'd first.
And then the White House social media, official social media account, they shared that post.
So it was not a meme account. It was official accounts sharing this picture of him as the Pope. Because as you might remember, last week when asked about who he thinks should be Pope, his first answer was, I think I'd make a good Pope. And then he went on to mention Cardinal Dolan.
Yeah, so the dilemma we face is it encourages those who always default to Trump derangement instead of just blow us up and say, there you go again. But you know what? Some things are more significant and more important than that.
Well, this is what trolling is, right? It's like you throw things out there that are insignificant or a joke to you to get a reaction out of people. And the choice becomes, what do you react to and what don't you react to?
So the cool part, though, is I'm a Catholic. I have a sort of vested interest in the storyline because, you know, again, the timing of this is horrific. When you lose, and most people consider Timothy Dolan a conservative cardinal from New York.
Mm-hmm.
He's not like a liberal by any stretch of the imagination. So when you do things like this at the time when the Pope Francis has just passed, and on Wednesday they're going to be starting the conclave in the Sistine Chapel to pick the next Pope, sort of bad timing, no? And just insensitive and stupid which I think I could use for about five different stories related to the president this week, which maybe we'll touch on later. I'm just curious, all those Catholics, I know there's a lot of Catholics in Milwaukee. I see you lining up for those fish fries on Friday during Lent. I know you're out there. What do you think about this? Or is anything this president does, however insensitive or in some cases just cruel, anything goes because it's politics? Is that what we're going with?
Well, it was interesting because even, as we just said, Cardinal Dolan, who Trump hinted that he favors as the next pope, was asked about it. And the quote was, well, it wasn't good.
No.
So you don't even have there's him. Any official response from any Catholic leadership that has said, it was just a joke. It's fine.
So are we supposed to just accept, because it's the president of the United States, an office I have a lot of respect for, because it's the president, he can just do it and say whatever he wants, even though when it's insensitive and cruel and disrespectful to not only the individual, Pope Francis, who's now buried, and to the process of picking the next pope, which I still think is significant to 1.4 billion Catholics in the world. Are we just supposed to leave it aside because, oh, you're just picking on our poor little president? That's Trump derangement syndrome, which is the dumbest, lamest thing I've ever heard.
But
in my life.
I mean, what it is like you can't take a joke. And that's what I think
it's
it comes
not
back
a joke.
To. But that's why they posted it. Like if you pressed on it, it was like, oh, he doesn't seriously think that he could be the Pope. He's not even Catholic, la da 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 da. And the excuses of the post itself is lighten up. Don't take it so seriously.
I wish I could say that he doesn't think he could be Pope. Because part of me says, what in his bio and all the things he's said and done over the last, I don't know how many years, gives the idea he wouldn't actually think that he'd be a great Pope? I mean, I could
Do you think he could name four books from the Bible?
No. He doesn't have basic concepts of right and wrong, just to start. And this will make a lot of you crazy, but since I've already started that process by bringing this topic up, I said to somebody the other day, I think on a text, this president might be bat you know what crazy. Like, I'm serious, like, you know what crazy. And this type of thing sort of lends itself to that assessment. It's not good, especially at this time.
But I also wonder, we go back to who's in the cabinet, who's in his inner circle, who's running his social media accounts, because this is not the first move from the White House official social media accounts that has posted some offensive material that is like much more akin to a meme account or like a trolling account that doesn't have a real name tied behind it, let alone the White House account, including an ASMR video of men getting sent to a gulag, right? As far as the chains and the handcuffs and everything, and thinking that that was an appropriate thing to post on the official White House. And I don't, is that above his pay grade? Not his pay. I mean, is that he is way above that. So as far as, is he even aware of certain things that are getting posted from the White House account is my point.
I have no idea.
Versus is this some young, you know, right wing influencer type social media savant who's like, this will be hilarious. And he has free reign to do it.
Maybe it's one of the Doge guys. A little bit different when the president posts versus some, you know, nut job from Rhinelander, Wisconsin, who takes pictures of himself in like tactical gear he's bought on the internet, who never served in the military, and then assumes that he knows everything about politics and in our world. That's different. This is the president of the United States who should rise above this nonsense, and it's an insult to Catholics. And if you're Catholic, you should be offended by this. Got to take a break. After the break, Dave Spano, CEO of Annex Wealth Management, join us. Lots to talk about. Wage inflation, certainly. This crazy Fed sort of relationship between the aforementioned Donald Trump and Jerome Powell. We'll get to all of that with Kristen and Steve on the Point Taken program right here on 620 WTMJ.
Ooh, that music can only mean one thing. Dave Spano, CEO and President of Annex Wealth Management, joins us on Mondays. How are you doing today, Dave?
Good, Kristen. How are you?
We are great. All right. Well, lots of things to cover, per usual.
Yeah.
So let's start with wage inflation. Steve was saying that this is something that you've been writing about lately.
Yeah, we've been talking about it because obviously we want, you know, people's income to go up, and we got a wage inflation report, you know, about 3.5%, and you have to look at what's called the real indicator, right? So that really you have to subtract out inflation. So real wages were up 1% more than inflation, which is good. So inflation has come down in big part because of energy prices have come down. And so the real wages are up about 1%, and that is good news.
That is good news.
All right, Dave. So I was listening to Money Talk, and I also read Axiom, your weekly newsletter, which is fantastic. And I encourage people to go sign up and get that because it's sort of like the talking points of the week when it comes to financial planning and certainly what the economy and other sectors are doing. And you were talking about the relationship between Jerome Powell at the Fed and the President of the United States. Describe the relationship and what this means for certainly interest rates going forward.
Yeah, well, there certainly isn't a bromance going on between those two guys.
Hey, wait, good way to describe that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, Jerome Powell is the chairman of the Fed, and, you know, he doesn't have the entire decision on lowering rates or raising rates, but his history has been slow to the trigger. And we saw that obviously during COVID, we saw that after that. And they had these emergency interest rate environment in place for a really long time. So they had zero interest rate policy for too long. That heated things up in big part, and you and I have talked about this for years, Steve, is that in part created the inflationary environment that we have. And now it appears, at least in Trump's eyes and some economists, that he'll be late to lower rates as well. So right now we have a restrictive policy. And what that means is that they're trying to slow the economy down, right, at, you know, 5% Fed funds rate, when the economy is suggesting that we probably need a kick in the pants. And you look at, for example, the Treasury rates right now, they are also suggesting that. So if you look at the two pieces of evidence that looking forward, they suggest that you should lower rates. The Fed's problem is they always look in the rear view mirror. And the reason why they do that is they want to base their decision on facts. And I get that. The problem with it is, for example, and I'm not just saying that we are, but if we are in a recession right now, you certainly don't want restrictive interest rate policy in place. And so, you know, obviously we had, well, not obvious, but it looks like a first quarter negative GDP. Mm-hmm. If this quarter stays at negative GDP, then that means we are in a recession right now, which suggests that we should lower interest rates.
Yeah, that's where I was going, because I listen to Money Talk and I read what you guys write in Axiom. You guys feel like this is the time where we should be cutting those interest rates. And I guess if you do that, what do you think will happen next?
If you do that, you'll probably get an acceleration of the economy, and that's really what we're trying to do right now. I mean, in fact, you look at where the stock market is, and you can't turn, you know, anywhere in the press and see that, you know, the stock market's getting crushed and all these things. But this is what I'll challenge you to, and I'll challenge your listeners to say, where do you think how do you think the market has performed since April 2nd?
I just read this.
Is that Liberation
Day? It's actually been up. It's been up like nine days. Right. S&P has been up for like 9 days in a row, right?
9 days in a row, and it's exactly back to where it was when the Liberation Day, or whatever it was called, started. So on April 2nd, if you look at what the S&P 500 was, which was about 5,700, today we're just short of 5,700. So it's flat since then, right? Yeah. So that all of that consternation has been put to the side to some extent. And to me, the market is a better liberator, I mean, a better litigator and a better arbiter than some of the press, right? And so if you look at that as an arbiter, the market's saying, we think we can look past this already. And so if you look into the future, to answer your long way to answer your question, Steve, if we can look past this and interest rates come back down and you get through the tariffs, the market is setting itself up for a better second half.
Mm.
If we get through the tariffs, when's the expiration date on the stay on that?
Pause.
The pause?
Yeah. So let's talk through that. So right now there's the two buckets, Kristen, right?
Yep.
There's the tariffs that, you know, the 10% tariffs, which are creating revenue right now. There's no doubt. We see that coming into the Treasury already. And then there's the other bucket, the negotiation bucket. And, you know, even as of this morning, and, you know, you got to discount some of this, right? But they're saying they have, you know, a dozen to a dozen and a half countries that they're going to get closer with to try to get a deal done. And you have to look at, you know, what countries are there and are they really going to get to, an agreement. But India, Japan, maybe some of Europe, you know, he started on Canada again, but Canada and Mexico would be good to put some of this stuff aside. And this is the key, and this is really the takeaway. The uncertainty of the tariffs are going to be worse than the tariffs themselves. And so if we get through this as Americans, right, and we get through this tariff policy and we get some certainty, we then can move forward.
All right. Well, we'll have you back in just a minute. We're going to take a quick break with our guest is Dave Spano, who is the CEO and president of Annex Wealth Management. I have a question about two different of our favorite richest men for you, Dave, when we come back. This is Point Taken.
Got local news coming up at the bottom with Connie Weber. Of course, the latest from ABC. Dave Spano joining us from Annex Wealth Management. Kristen alluded to it before the break. I used that word a couple times today. I got to stop saying that. Big names in the finance world and the billionaire world, certainly.
The billionaire world, for sure. Big news over the weekend at the Woodstock for capitalists.
Were you there, Dave?
Yeah, were you there?
No, I was not. I was not. But, I mean, Buffett has done so much for all of our financial planning. And some of the sayings he has are just fantastic. And, again, relevant, again, unfortunately, at 90-plus years old, he's going to step aside.
Yeah, so at 94, after 60 years, Warren Buffett announced this weekend that he is retiring, which I think is probably well-earned. And so I guess, would you say this is someone who deserves the GOAT title? Is he someone who impacted your career at all?
For sure. Yeah, I he's probably the GOAT. Yeah, that's number one. He obviously is very, very wealthy, number one. Number two is he has said so many things at the appropriate time. You know, he's got so many sayings. You know, the one that obviously got a lot of attention is, you'll remember this, Kristen, back in 2008 when the market was just melting down. We had this cascading failures of financial institutions. I used to come to the studio on Saturday mornings, and we'd read, you know, what banks had failed. But anyways, he had written a article in the Wall Street Journal, and this saying has just gotten legs: is when folks are greedy, when folks are greedy, you have to be get into the market, and when they're not greedy, you have to get away from the market.
Yeah.
So I'm slipping right now, but that is what you want to get to, and that is one of the things that he used to talk about, is that is you have to look for fear, and when there's fear in the market, where there is right now, that's generally an opportunity to invest.
Well, there you go. Highly recommend Becoming Warren Buffett, which is an HBO documentary about him. And my other question,
I just came to me. When people are fearful, be greedy. And when they're greedy, be fearful.
Oh, there you go.
All right. My other question is, thoughts on Jeff Bezos, another very rich man, is planning to sell as much as $4.8 billion worth of Amazon stock. Do you have any comment on that or thoughts?
Well, you know, there's probably some estate planning that's happening there, and I'm not surprised. You know, when you look at how much he's worth, I mean, that's a small percentage. And, you know, folks have to do that. We talk about estate planning all the time, and you can create some liquidity during your lifetime as well versus just having all those shares in your life. So I'm sure that's part of it. But, you know, there's lots of billionaires who make lots of news, of course. Your favorite, you know, is Elon Musk. I mean, you'd probably rather have with Beelzebub than get together with Elon Musk. But, you know, he's stepping aside too and going back to his day job. So there's a lot of things that are happening in the market that is going to give us some clarity as we get into the second half of the year. The things that you want to look for example, would be some tariff clarity. That's number one. Number two would be the tax policy. What's going to come out of that tax policy? Obviously, there's things in a tax policy that can, you know, set forth the way our priorities. And, you know, Democrats and Republicans and independents' priorities are all different. But look what comes out of that tax policy. That's number two. Number three, does the Fed do something? And are they too late to the party? Which they may be. Their history, Kristen, has been that they are too late to the party. And then number four is, what does the second half of the year look like for earnings? So we could be setting ourselves up for a better second half.
I said it at the beginning. I listened to most of the Money Talk program this weekend. It is one of the best sources for information about what's happening, many of the things we just talked about, but also setting your course for a successful future, whether it's financial planning or just understanding where your investments go. It is a great listen. It's available in the podcast. Real quick, Dave, because I asked you about this when we recorded the webinar not too long ago. You're coming on my podcast, right?
Yeah, whenever you want me.
Yeah, because I want to talk about this Elon Musk thing that you sort of nudged me with before, because there's a lot of good material.
Was he nudging you or was he nudging me?
I don't know. I think he's nudging both of us.
Well, I was getting both of you. Well, you want, by the way, no one asked me about, I gave you a biblical reference there with Beelzebub. No one asked me about books in the Bible, so.
Oh, plenty of fodder for the podcast. Dave will join me. Dave's a great guest always, and that's one of the reasons I wanted to make sure that he was part of our news show, Point Taken. Thanks as always, Dave Spano.
Yeah, you guys
catch you next week.
Have a great show.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's always got the wisdom. He always brings it. And that's one of the things I love about Dave, and why I wanted this segment to continue, because I had gotten away from that for a while.
Well, welcome back to Point Taken. I am Kristen Bry. He is Steve Scafidi. And you like SNL, right?
Huge fan. That's why one of the reasons I have Christian Snyder on, because he's an expert on SNL. He can tell me all the things I missed over the 50-plus years that it's been on.
Oh, yeah. So, you know, sometimes their cold open is hit or miss. But I have to say that their cold open from this weekend made me chuckle.
This order would reduce the number of interracial couples in TV commercials.
Oh, it's just too many, right? You see them in the kitchen together making meal from HelloFresh. He's wearing loafers. She's got tight braids. You're like, where'd they meet, you know? What do they even talk about? It's insane.
Well done, sir.
So, yeah, so the bit being, you know, a lot of executive orders. And a lot of executive orders that it's like, oh, this is what you're hung up on?
Yeah, and you know, you may say, oh, that's just them having fun, but I mean, this is a president who probably at some point is gonna, I don't know if it's an executive order yet, but he wants to bring back Alcatraz.
That was as someone who has toured Alcatraz. I did the night tour. Did you ever do the night tour when you lived in San Francisco?
It was daytime.
It's a little creepy at night.
I can imagine. First of all,
and cold.
Yeah, so if you don't know, it's sitting there, it's an island of rock, basically, and there's this old prison on, you know, famously in the 30s and 40s. Mm-hmm.
It's been closed for 46 years.
It's a tourist location.
Now it's a tourist. Yeah, it brings like $60 million in of tourism for San Francisco.
I'm not a construction person, but legitimately to bring that back to like full maximum security prison status would be like billions of dollars. I mean, this is not something that would be easy. Just the transportation getting people back and forth is not easy.
Well, so that wasn't actually an executive order, and this doesn't. I don't think this is an executive order yet, although it may be as far as the movie industry goes. So this was...
Yeah, I saw that.
Was this morning or yesterday morning?
I think it was a Truth Social post by the president.
So he has authorized a tariff on movies made outside of the U.S. So this... Sorry, it was yesterday evening. He said on Truth Social, the movie industry in America is dying a very fast death. And then he's authorizing Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick and U.S. Trade Representative Jameson Greer to immediately begin the process of instituting a 100% tariff on movies coming into our country that are produced in foreign lands. Now, I don't know exactly what this means, but the market reacted. Like, different studio stocks fell when he sent this out.
Of course, yeah.
I just don't know how it is. It what gets... what gets tariffed when the movie comes here? Is it the ticket sales?
Or
is it the distribution? Like, what part of the process?
There must be some licensing that has to happen for a foreign film to come here. I don't know. But that's the thing.
Is it the fact, it's not just foreign film, it's movies that are American filmmakers, but because it's tax incentives are easier to film it somewhere else? Is that included?
One of the most famous films of all time, series of films, Star Wars. Much of that was filmed in like Tunisia and other places. So
really, back then it was.
Oh yeah,
I would have thought a lot of that was in the soundstage.
No, in England and Tunisia and other exotic locales and deserts across the world. So I'm not sure. This is another example, and I know people hate when I say this, so save the texts and emails, of a idea not well thought out. It just comes to him late at night, or I don't know when this was released on Truth Social, but just a dumb idea. What's the problem you're fixing here? You don't like Hollywood, so you're going to try to penalize them? Is that what you're trying to do here?
Because it seems like he does like Hollywood.
I don't know that
right?
He does.
Right? That you would want more... Because this is not... It's not a... I don't know how you actually implement tariffs on foreign films. But this is a problem when you think about the vitality of Los Angeles, in that the amount... How expensive it is to make TV shows and films in Los Angeles is through the roof. And this is a conversation that goes back to when for create action Wisconsin.
Right.
When we didn't talk about it in this show, we talked about it on Spanning the State,
right,
which is Wisconsin is one of the very few states that no longer gives any kind of tax incentives for films and TV crews to film here. And there's a group that wants to do that. But a lot of states now provide that, because, and so it's a lot cheaper to film outside of California or potentially outside of the U.S.
But so, correct me if I'm wrong. That's not what he's saying. He's not saying incentivize more productions here. He's just talking about some impact on foreign films.
Is that what he's saying?
Yes. Because I don't, I'm reading this thing. I don't see anything in there about incentivizing people to record their movies, film their movies in places like Wisconsin or, you know, Pennsylvania or where, pick a locale, pick a state. I think a texter makes the best point. And I got to apologize because this is skimming pretty fast. Don't feel bad, Kristen. Trump doesn't know either. It's just the ramblings of an old lunatic. Yeah, that's in your world, maybe some of you, that's Trump derangement syndrome. Or is it just me saying this is a really dumb idea?
I mean, do we have to at least before we have to talk about the fact that he doesn't know whether or not he's going to uphold the Constitution, right?
Yeah, that's another development this weekend.
So if you missed it, President Trump did little to quiet critics, warning of a constitutional crisis in an exclusive interview with Meet the Press that aired on Sunday, specifically when he was asked about being obligated to uphold the Constitution.
I was elected to get him the hell out of here, and the courts are holding me from doing it.
But even given those numbers that you're talking about, don't you need to uphold the Constitution of the United States as president?
I don't know. I have to respond by saying again, I have brilliant lawyers that work for me, and they are going to obviously follow what the Supreme Court said.
All right. First of all, air quote brilliant as far as his lawyers. But this point, as we go to break, you're not the one person who gets to decide all of this. This is a country where we have freedoms and we have certainly have courtrooms and our Constitution. And frankly, the easy answer to that question that you were asked, just thrown by Kristen Welker, the easy answer to that question is yes.
It was in the oath, right?
Yes.
Yes. Is that why he didn't put his hand in the Bible?
Maybe he's playing that game where I didn't really touch it, so I don't have to say that. Yeah, the answer to that question is yes. Quick break on Point Taken on 620 WTMJ. Welcome back to Point Taken, Kristen and Steve. One of the big things that's happening right now is my salute to service. Thanks to the folks at Waterstone Bank. We're going to bring you this week some of our previous honorees. This is a great story. Washington County Sheriff Tyler Lallier, I think is how you say his last name, and his wife Elizabeth, who nominated him. Tremendous feature. This is it.
Hi, this is Elizabeth Lallier, and I'm nominating my husband Tyler for the Salute to Service Award.
Hi, I'm Tyler Lallier. I am a detective for the Washington County Sheriff's Office. 18 years this last April.
I nominated him because I really appreciate how hard he works. He puts his heart and soul into work, but he's still able to come home at the end of the day and be a husband and dad. We make it work.
How do the kids feel about all of that?
The oldest, he's just super proud. He understands. He's 15. He understands the type of work that Tyler's doing. The younger ones, they just think dad's cool. He's a hero. He puts bad guys in jail. But you can tell that they think it's awesome. And I can tell when he's had a bad day. A bad day for him looks a lot different than a bad day for me at work. I try to be supportive, and sometimes I don't even know how to do that because he can't always talk about what he's doing and seeing at work.
It's large for any department, any individual detective. They have a bunch of cases. You have to figure out and prioritize what's important that day, who can you help, and what can you accomplish.
Well, you worked on a case involving human trafficking of children.
There's different kinds of cyber tips that come in to law enforcement regarding inappropriate content regarding children. This is one of those where an individual was suspected of possessing videos of children.
Child abuse case in Washington County leads to arrests overseas. 35-year-old Michael Westfall was arrested last July and remains in custody on $5,000 bond. Prosecutors say Westfall was communicating with a sex trafficker in the Philippines and was paying money for videos of a young boy being assaulted. This led to an investigation between U.S. and Philippine officials. They say a raid was just carried out this week, leading to three arrests and the rescue of six children.
This is one of those things that impacts every community, and nobody really knows about it on the forefront because it's just something that's done behind computer screens, and it's involving all the kids throughout the world. there's a large majority of our cases are sensitive crime style cases regarding children.
In this recent case, he was spending his entire day going through phones and computers, watching videos, looking at pictures of some of the most horrible things you could imagine and probably can't even imagine.
You have to have a good foundation, whether that be friends or family, because you're going to need support through this. If you're one of those people that holds everything in, it's going to be tough. So it's nice to have a great wife, a great family, a great work family to be able to bounce things off, to be successful.
It takes a really, really strong head, mental strength to do the things that first responders do, and especially detectives and investigators, special agents. They're digging really deep. They're working behind the scenes. I'm glad they're there doing it because it's hard work. But I'm really proud of him. His family's proud of him. His mom, his dad, our whole family. We're very proud of him, and we're glad that he's doing what he does. He's good at it.
When I say the word salute to service, what does that mean to you?
I guess acknowledging and recognizing the people behind the scenes that sacrifice a piece of themselves for the greater good. It's tough. I like saying behind the scenes. It's tough to talk about this kind of stuff, but I work with great people who I consider to be heroes. There are people that make the ultimate sacrifice. From the patrol up to the detective bureau to the court service, everybody in Washington County is great. So a salute to this is just a good nod.
I like my eggs over easy. I'm hungry.
Did you not have breakfast?
No. I did have a protein shake, which, you know, good on the protein, but boy, it still makes you hungry. Just random.
Does that make you think of this song? Or what?
Any way you want it.
Oh.
Yes. So you got to think. See, there's saying. Layers to my complexity or lack thereof.
How the connection. Yeah. Word association. All right. You mentioned that I won a WBA over the weekend for Best
Cool.
Online Personality, which was very exciting. But also, producer Jaslyn won one as well. So you won one. Which promo did you win it for?
Oh, it was for my season primer for the Brewers season.
Oh,
had a little bit of every one of the people we have on the call. And, you know, Bob Bucher, which was especially permanent, you know.
Congrats.
Yeah, thank you.
Well deserved. That's always a big deal for those folks who go to. I've been on a couple of them. It's a long program. Like
I went last year.
3 hours plus.
And was not able to go this year. But, you know, it's a fun industry event to see other people.
I'm not going
to
say it's long, but I've gone clean shaven and come out of that thing with a full beard.
Da-da-da. All right. Well, other
we got time yet.
Than that,
Two
we
minutes.
Still have time. Yeah, but yeah. There was, it is also Teacher Appreciation Week.
Which I love, because, as you know, I'm married to
you're
a teacher.
You were married to a teacher? Mm-hmm. Who was your teacher that you always call out that changed your life?
Miss Adi.
Yeah.
Yeah. She encouraged me to do more public speaking and not be afraid of my voice, which some of those texters today said, oh, I wish she wouldn't have existed.
It's like, oh, man.
God, what did she unleash on us? But, you know, she encouraged me, which is one of the best things you can do as a teacher. Not only do they teach you, but they encourage you to be a better version of yourself. That's awesome.
Oh, man, I want to open a can of worms so badly right now that we don't have time for.
Yeah.
Because you were saying this morning as far as how students should only be learning the basics.
You love that topic.
And
so much.
That is your conservative view on if they can't do the other things, they should just be doing arithmetic and reading. Where does motivation and encouragement come into that school day?
You can still motivate and encourage someone teaching them the basic things that all of us.
But then if there's no public teaching class, the public speaking classes, because they have to be focused on the basics.
The idea of what I have suggested, which I have no illusions ever going to, you know, be put forward in a serious way, is that you give them the goal of doing just enough to get what they need in those areas, and then they can aspire to take all the other classes that are so interesting and useful. I think that's part of the fun of it for me. It's a different way of looking at education, which I don't know if you want to argue this point, but I think that's what we have to start doing, because what we're doing ain't working.
We will put a pin in it because we do not have time to argue it right now. But it is Teacher Appreciation Week, so thank a teacher this week in your
Absolutely.
Life or your kids' teachers. And we'll be back tomorrow to do this all over again. Josh Showman is going to be joining us to talk about his campaign launch.